Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan at SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm Dave Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 42, and it's the bye week, Dave. And it's our, we'll call it our first annual reader question session, although we've had a bunch of these. But we're really going to dedicate a lot of today's show to our bye week questions. We've got a million of them, so we'll try to get to as many as we can. And we'll certainly carry some of them over to next week as well. Steelers obviously got some work in early in the week. They get 4 days off. They'll come back on Monday. So a chance to for them to kick back and for us to get our lives sorted out as we head to the second half.
Yeah, I'm not sure my life will get sorted out. I'm not happy unless I'm unhappy and out of sorts.
All right. Well, let's we've got a lot to get to here with this. And one, first of all, we are overwhelmed with kind of the outreach in terms of donations that people have given to us. There was another extraordinarily generous donation by Edward. So Edward, just off the top here, wanted to thank you, but just wanted to read a list, just really quickly roll through a list of names and of people who made. This isn't a complete list, but, and you know, I will send an email out to everybody, but Michael Fedek, Chris Allen, Nicholas Shanaja, I'm going to butcher some of these, Wayne Kievers, Gina Gabriel, John Wolf, Robert Kahneman, Ross Whitley, Junior Anderson, Brian Giaramonte, Kevin Brand, David Orocheno, Anthony Pastor, Michael Lowry, Aaron Johnson, Gregory Saunders, Michael Ellis, Christopher Neal, Randall Buxbaum, Thomas Kastner, Atten Rayo, Junior Anderson, Yeshaya Clare, Jeremy Clark, Joshua Thomas, Jason Bell, Tony Tremaine, Randall Buxbaum, Edward Verdream, Junior Anderson, Benjamin Kirk, Stefan Maxwell. We've got a couple of these twice. Andrew Bell, Joyce Sneakers, Joyce Sneakers, David. Oh, yeah, we got a couple of these people. Keep going, doing it twice. I love it. Babette Landine, Todd Krasminski, Tim James, Adam Reinhart, Steve Grill, Jason Kelly, Dennis Dias, Kathleen Gerhold, Eric McDuffie, Inigo Pineda. Okay, that's an early list. We'll try to read some of these each show of people who have been given donations. So thanks so much. We're going to set up a Patreon account for people who don't use PayPal if you want to do that. And it's massively appreciated. And we don't say that often enough. And I know this week when we have some time, we wanted to thank those people. And we're going to get to a lot of their questions as we get going here. Dave?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Couldn't be more happier and thankful. And as David said, I just gave him the full list of emails today so he can start cranking on some emails, some personal emails to Yens out there. We certainly do appreciate it. Dave, did you want to kind of start off? You said you wanted to start off with the original story this morning. Is that?
Yeah. A couple of people asked how Dave and I got together. And since your memory is better than mine, I think, although neither of ours is outside of the football world, is not particularly great. You know, what happened for – I'll tell my side of the story and let Dave do his. When I left New York in late 2009 and came back to Pittsburgh, I'd been working on Wall Street. And when the world changed in 2008, my job went away. They offered me a job in sales, which for better or worse, I didn't take. Maybe not the best decision of my life, but one I made. And I hung around New York for a little while longer. And if you're not employed, New York's a great place to be. But you will burn through any cash you have if you go out and partake in the sights and sounds of New York City for any extended period of time. And I knew that was going to be the case. So I sold my apartment, moved back to Pittsburgh, moved in with mom and dad at age, you know, around age 40. And I'm not sure they were thrilled about it, but I was trying to figure out what to do and looked at a lot of things in business and in sports in a variety of different areas, much of which I'm doing again today, ironically. And Twitter was relatively new at the time. And I was on Twitter, and we're all trying to figure out how Twitter works and what it's used for and how to interact. And podcasts were also something that was relatively new. And I was trying to find people that I could engage with and talk sports with. And I don't know that I had an agenda, but along the way, I came across Dave, who was a very early active Twitter user, as many of you can imagine. So, Dave, I'll kind of leave it right there and let you kind of pick up the ball.
Yeah, the thing is I don't think I really came across you on Twitter first. I mean, obviously, I found you after contacting you, but the long story short, I knew, geez, I mean, this is how many years ago now, 8 or so, 9 years ago, I knew that I wanted to develop a pie. And look, that many years ago, podcasting was still kind of, you know, not everybody was doing it. Let's just put it to you that way. A lot of people were, and it's one of those trends that you start looking at and say, look, you know, I think this might be something I can do, you know, kind of an extension of Steelers Depot. I obviously, and I still do not have, I'm not perfect for radio, if you will, but I knew that I could not do a podcast on my own. I knew that the best way to do it was to have kind of a co-host, if you will, someone who could really help carry the show, someone maybe that had experience doing it. So I just started searching, you know, kind of Pittsburgh radio personalities. And at that time, I believe David was doing a nightly or had just finished doing a nightly kind of post-game call-in show, I think on 104 or something, correct me if I'm wrong.
I was doing the Pirates pre- and post-game show at the time, so yeah, that's what you're thinking of.
And I think that's all you were doing, and the good thing about it is that site had posted, was ahead of the curve, really, in posting archives of those shows up on the internet. So somehow I came across that, and I was able to listen to, you know, a few of those shows. And I thought, man, you know, this guy's really engaging. He sounds like a radio, you know, he sounds like I like to call him, I like to call him sports DJs, if you will.
Yeah, DJ, right?
You know, but, you know, you sound like you knew your stuff. Obviously, we're passionate. Seemed to be good with the callers and whatnot, and you really didn't, I don't think, had a regular gig outside of that. So I think that's where I started. I don't know if I emailed you or if I hit you on Twitter after that, but, you know, that's kind of how it all started, and you were gung-ho, you know, to get started on it. Then, you know, we quickly came up with the name of the show. And then,
which I'll give Dave 100% credit for. We threw a bunch of names out there, and he threw out the terrible podcast, and it was done, right? As soon as he said it, I was like, that's it.
I knew I was going to be part of it, so it'd be terrible. Then, of course, it played into the whole terrible towel thing, and it just looked like a great, it sounded great initially, and here we are all these seasons later. So that's kind of the long and short, and I think I hooked up with you on Twitter from there, and here we are.
Yeah, and some people asked about the logo up front, and Who's the Hammer Speaks and all that. And I was writing a blog, and it was a name that I had used, a nom de plume in business school, that somebody had put on me, the Hammer. And so I was the Hammer Speaks. It was didn't have anything better. And as you can see, we haven't exactly hurried to update our logo, and we've run with this intro and tried to figure that out. And, you know, those are probably important marketing things for us that we should spend a little more time focusing on, which we don't because we're so content focused. But that's the genesis of how we got started. And, you know, and I'll happily say, and Dave will as well, is it's mostly been wine and roses, but not always. We've had our scraps along the way. There were times when, you know, both of us wondered if it was worth continuing and doing. And in our relationship, I think people generally know that Dave and I have never met. Although, as he likes to point out, he's probably spent more time talking to me than his wife over the past few years. And it's a pretty happy relationship overall, at least from my side. And I think hopefully from the listener's side as well.
Oh yeah, we've had our spats for sure.
All right, so that's the background to how we got to the terrible podcast, and as we mentioned the other day, closing in on episode 1000. Dave, let's get to some of these questions, and there were a lot of them. And as people can very well might expect, a lot of them focused around Ben Roethlisberger and kind of Ben Roethlisberger's play and what we think about where Ben is, and you know, is Ben the problem? What are your concerns going forward? So let's just, before I get to specific questions, why don't you give me your thoughts on, you know, kind of where Ben is right now, how long you expect him to play, and the level he's playing this year relative to himself and relative to what you see in quarterback play around the league?
I think he's middle of the pack right now. You know, but even so, we've seen him make some throws this season that leads us to believe that he hasn't lost it yet. There have been instances, though, where I think he needs to stop trying to throw for the chains in certain situations. He's missed some open guys underneath, as we pointed out in the past. Look, 9 interceptions on the season. 5 of them came in a game against the Jaguars. A lot of those are explainable. As is one of those interceptions, the one to Antonio Brown. It looked like a completion that got stripped out. A lot of people forget that was ruled an interception. An interception in the game against the Chiefs. Antonio Brown quits, you know, on that slant, and Marcus Peters gets a gift there. So I don't want to make I don't want to excuse 9 interceptions, because those things hurt, but there is some rhyme and reason behind them. Additionally, I don't want to, you know, I'm not letting Ben totally off the hook, because the deep ball has not been there this season, and the most curious aspect about that is a lot of those were not catchable footballs. Whether or not you want to put that on Ben, whether or not you want to put that on miscommunication on a few of them, have at it. You know, it's just, this is not the same Ben that we've seen. And I think, as I wrote in a post on Thursday, David, I think one of the most concerning things outside of the deep ball issues this year with Roethlisberger is the fact that, man, on third and manageable passing situations, talking about 3rd and 3 to 3rd and 6,
yeah,
he has not been great this year.
And, they've been terrible.
And those are issues. You know, let's see. What is he? First eight regular season games, he's attempted 27 total pass attempts. When facing 3rd down, between 3rd and 6 to go, he's completed just 13 of those for a 48.1 completion percentage. And that's
now. Let me stop
worst.
You for 1 second. So that's between 3rd and 3 and 3rd and 6. Now, Dave, gut feeling. Now, I love the fact that you have this data. My gut feeling, and I think one of the things that's going to be concerning of our listeners, and it's certainly concerning for me, which I imagine, which is why I think it's probably concerning for a larger group of people, is the Steelers don't seem to be throwing or calling plays oftentimes that are designed to get the first down. If it's 3rd and 3, run a pass where you get 5 yards rather than something over the deep middle or down the sidelines. And we've talked, you know, ad nauseum about, look, when you get some of these short yardage situations on 3rd down, those are the opportunities where you're going to get single man coverage without help over the top. So you take shots. I get it, but I think we've seen that the Steelers have not been running patterns, it appears, where they can do that. And that's where, you know, I always think Eli Rogers is the guy who should be, you know, involved in those situations. You would think the tight ends, Jesse James. Maybe we see Juju more of that. So, yeah, that's a concern for me, and I love that you have the data to support that.
Here's one other final note on that. Of those 14 third and manageable pass incompletions that Roethlisberger has had on you know, third down and 3 to 6 yards needed, 0-4 on the deep pass attempts on those downs. And by deep pass attempts, we're talking about longer than 15 yards past the line of scrimmage. So remember, we're talking about 3rd and 3 to 6, and on 4 of those 14 incompletions, which is what, almost a third of them, he's throwing way past the chains. Okay.
Yeah, and that doesn't count the 3rd and 1 and 3rd and 2s where they've done that.
Right, exactly. This is just 3-6. Now, a lot of times, I mean, he doesn't have, I think he just got two or three deep passes on third and 1-3 situations there, and I think a couple of them have just come into recent games there. So, you know, that's one thing to look at in the second half of the season. How can Roethlisberger do in these third and 3-6 situations? He needs, they need him, Todd Haley, whoever you want to put it on. I don't give a crap. They need to start completing more of these because, look, it's evident if you look. I don't know if you saw that stat I posted last night on Twitter. The Steelers have been in the red zone. Only two other teams have been in the red zone more than the Steelers this year, the Patriots and the Rams, okay?
Yeah.
So they're
and we know the Rams are the highest scoring team, and they're second highest scoring team in the NFL. The Patriots, we know what they do explosively. So, and, look, people will look at the Steelers the same way and say, you know, it says a lot about their offense that they're able to get the chunk yards and sustain drives. So obviously they're, you know, they are either getting bigger plays or converting some level of third downs. But, you know, then we'll get into the red zone woes in a bit. Dave Robb asks, are we going to find out, you know, in 6 months or after the season ends that Ben's been dealing with a shoulder or arm injury? He says you go back to the first half of the Detroit game. Ben overthrows a pass and grimaces. Now Ben makes some faces when, you know, when he misses or a receiver might miss, so I'm not sure. Do you think Ben's – let's get to the gist of it. Do you think Ben's healthy?
Yeah, I do. And, look, if he wasn't, he wouldn't be afraid to tell you.
Yeah.
He loves throwing that stuff out there and then having a good game and being Superman, if you will, and overcoming that. Look, he was asked, I think, not long ago about his throwing motion and if he thought he needed to get an outside guy to look at all that. He doesn't view there's anything wrong with his mechanics. He even said his shoulder's healthy and all, you know, he's asked his agent about that, yada, yada. To me, I don't think he's – now, will he come out as an excuse if something goes wrong and say, yeah, I had 13 hangnails and this, that, and the other? Personally, I don't see anything on tape that lends me to believe that he's not healthy.
Here's one, Goat Words, we don't have a name with him. He asked a question of who's the better quarterback, Ben or Joe Flacco, and where do you think the Steelers would be if Joe Flacco was the quarterback? Well, I think it's, you know, clear that throughout his career, Ben's been the better quarterback. I mean, Joe Flacco, to his credit, look, at the biggest moment in his life, with all the marbles, you know, all the chips on the table, all the marbles riding on it, he got into the playoffs and he played unbelievably good football and won a Super Bowl, and it made him a generationally rich man. You know, I think Joe Flacco was a better quarterback up to that moment than he has been since that moment. I think Joe Flacco is at best an average quarterback today in the NFL, and I'll be surprised 2 years from now if Joe Flacco's a starting quarterback in the NFL. So I don't think the conversation's particularly close. So Dave, that's what I assume you agree with most of what I said there. And I'm going to change the channel on you a little bit and ask you this. Not where would the Steelers be today if Joe Flacco was the quarterback, but people probably, if they've seen me on Twitter, they know that I think Kirk Cousins is a pretty good quarterback and an underappreciated quarterback who doesn't have a lot of weapons around him. Would the Steelers be better off today if Kirk Cousins was their quarterback than Joe Flacco just today? Not. And this is not a question of who's the better quarterback, what's Ben's legacy, where they are today and what they're trying to do. Would they be better suited with Kirk Cousins than Joe Flacco?
Oh, wow.
Than Ben Roethlisberger.
First of all, Joe Flacco, I think, is still a legitimate quarterback. He doesn't have a lot to work with over there as far as receivers now. You know, and tight ends.
Or running game or anything.
Or offensive line. I mean, that offense is a pile of mess right now. You want to talk about Joe Flacco and a bunch of guys, that's what's going on there. Hey, and look, he can still throw the deep ball. I think he's a smart quarterback. Baltimore can still win a championship in the next several seasons with Joe Flacco as a quarterback. I'll leave that there.
I wouldn't go that far. Okay, but okay, good to hear.
He would not be the reason for them not winning one. We talk all the time about organizations needing quarterbacks to win championships. I believe he is quality enough still in order to do that. Okay, where he is, where Ben is right now. Look, Ben's got the better supporting cast right now. Obviously, you'd like to see Ben improve in some areas. I'm I'm not going to compare those two. Now, with Kirk Cousins, what was the question? Would the Steelers be in a better place with Kirk?
Well, to me, Kirk Cousins is playing better than Ben Roethlisberger right now. So there's not really a good way to frame this question. You said, and I agree, that Ben's playing in the middle of the league as quarterback. So if somebody's playing at a higher level, you know, then the Steelers would be, if Ben played at a higher level, obviously the Steelers would be better off. Let me phrase it like this. You know, people have asked about injury. People have asked about play calls. People have asked about Ben's relationship with the receivers and what's going on with the receivers. If you had a Steeler fan that was new to the Steelers and they just started watching them over the last year and a half, and you said, you know, the Ben Roethlisberger that you're seeing now isn't the Ben Roethlisberger that was the Ben Roethlisberger the first 11 and a half years of his career, and that person said, why? What would your answer be? I don't have a good answer.
I don't have a good one either. I mean, look, the narrative with him for a while has always been, you know, here's the thing. How many times we still occasionally see him extend a play and do a bend type play. We still see him do things like we saw in the Lions game where, okay, don't throw that bend. And then AB adjust on the football and fly and go, oh, good throw, Ben. You know, sometimes it's not all him. Sometimes it's the talent around him. Sometimes it is him extending plays. I don't think we see him extending plays as many times as we have had in the past where we're going, oh, that's just Ben being Ben, especially in the red zone area, if you will. Just a little bit older, maybe a little less mobile. You know, we've always joked about him liking his guys' college open. However, you know, he's shown some aggressiveness, I think, in the last two or three games. Go look at the next gen stats on the last two games with Roethlisberger and look at his aggressive rating. You know, he's throwing. Look at that passing through to Jesse James just the other game that you know snuck through there. He's still recognizing defenses. Look at what he did with Juju on that long touchdown reception. He pointed out the two deep. You know, it's not rocket science, you know. So I guess I do have a hard time saying what's different about Ben now than 6 years ago, other than his age and you know maybe that's about it. You know, just can't.
Yeah. So thinking about it. We talk about extending plays. You know, we don't see – I haven't seen, and I've been watching for this, and obviously we can pick examples that counter it. So when we're making generalizations, please don't respond with, well, on this play he did this. Because, of course, we're talking about I am making generalizations. I don't know that we see Ben climb the pocket as much as we used to. I don't certainly know that we see Ben and this is Tom Brady's greatest strength, is his ability to create space in the pocket, to be able to be – look, we all know Tom Brady's immobile, and he's not necessarily light or quick-footed, but he's able to move in the pocket so that he can make the throws he needs to make. Ben, it seems to me, we don't see – look, Ben doesn't run at all anymore. Ben used to run. Ben doesn't run. That's a, you know, you look at quarterbacks in today's game and you look at the, you know, you look at the guys running the read option, the Alex Smith, the Jared Goffs, even the Carson Wentzes. You know, these are, most of these guys are young guys. Alex Smith, Casey's a particularly mobile guy still at his age and he's not a big guy. It's not something Ben's going to do anymore. That takes a little bit away from the offense. That takes away some of the big play capability when he escapes the pocket because Ben doesn't look to extend plays the way he used to. And I think we probably have not really recognized that as much. I mean, think about plays where Ben has scrambled and kept a play alive 5 or 6 seconds and made a throw deep down the field. We used to see that all the time. That doesn't happen anymore. And I think there's less of it in the pocket. Now, look, the positive side of that is the Steelers rarely get sacked these days. I mean, rarely. I think it was a career low for Ben last year, and he's on pace maybe for even better this year. So that's a positive that keeps him around. But there's a plus minus with that. The other, and we got asked this, there was a very good question about me, my constant thought that, you know, Ben takes apart man-to-man defenses and has a lot of trouble with cover two and in the middle of the field. Alex has written some articles and has some supporting data that this year maybe that trend's a little bit different. Again, there are going to be games where some of this stuff is contradictory to one of his opinion or my opinion. The gist of it is, I think the basis for Dave and my opinion on this type of situation is, look, Ben, we do joke, but it's in seriousness, Ben doesn't throw receivers open that often. Now, there are times when he'll try to stick it in a window, and we've seen it, the touchdown pass to Jesse James, the touchdown pass to Antonio Brown, the pass over the middle, the Dave reference in the Lions game to James. Look, you're an NFL quarterback. You've got to stick it in there at times. But more often than not, Ben will see a guy break, and one of the things that the reasons he's had such a great relationship with Antonio Brown is when Antonio Brown freelances, he generally, at that point, the original pattern's off, so it's not a first read or a second read. So at that point, AB's probably making himself open, or the next receiver's making himself open, and that's an easier pass for any NFL quarterback to make. So, you know, reading defenses has always been a question about where Ben ranks on that scale, and I'm not sure any of us are qualified to give a perfect answer on that. Do I think he knows what's going on in the field? Absolutely. Do I think he's a guy who's always going to throw the ball early into a break, particularly with, you know, five receivers where you question what the relationship is? And that's something Todd Haley that I want Dave to get into as well. Todd Haley brought up in his Thursday meeting with the media of, you know, maybe all the bad throws aren't on Ben. He doesn't have a relationship with these guys. Dave, I think that's a stretch of a comment because Juju's the only new guy really in the offense. Juju and Vance McDonald are newer guys, but most of the targets are two guys who have been around. What did you think about Todd's comment?
Yeah, I thought it was if it was being used as an excuse, which it came off kind of trying to, you know, like it was, like I think many, you know, interpreted it to be. Yeah, look, I mean, I understand Martavis Bryant wasn't around all last season, but he's been around long enough. Yeah, the guy runs two routes. I mean, you throw it deep or you hit him on a slant, you know. I don't see that. And Juju, yes, Juju is new. Yeah, it's going to take time for maybe him to become the full-fledged Hines Ward with that choice route, you know, where each of them knows what the other one's thinking. Sure, Vance McDonald probably take him a little time, but we're eight games into the season now. You know, how many practices, you know, have these guys had now? And yeah, I know they don't go full out all the time here, but there's been enough time now that their second half of the season. Okay, Todd, we'll give you that in the first half. There is absolutely no reason for us not to see an improvement by all parties involved during the second half of the season. Look, you're probably going to get Marcus Gilbert back, we think, in week 10. Vance McDonald, you know, back from his one-game injury, we think.
Martavis
back, raring to go. Juju riding the wave right now. Le'Veon Bell, you know, seemed to be a lot more comfortable in the backfield. They're, you know, as I mentioned there just a little while ago, this team is moving the football, okay? They're moving the football. They have got to figure out something to do inside that red zone that makes it easier, you know, if they can't run it, you know, makes it easier for Ben to hit some guys. On top of it, I would, and we've seen this a little bit, I would like to see a little bit more window dressing. You know, go look at that play. The Saints ran. The Saints?
Yeah. Loved it. I tweeted that. The fake screen left, fake screen right, the one down the middle. Is that the one you mean?
No. Not only that one. There was another one. Man, I forget the team that ran. I want to say it was the Saints with the motion of the wide receiver. You had a fullback and a running back in the backfield.
Was that the Bears?
Maybe it was where
that Monday night play where the guy came across and then pitched it.
No. This one utilized a fullback and a running back in the backfield. They sent a wide receiver in motion. You know, kind of that orbit, what they call orbit motion.
Oh yeah, behind.
They run they run play action to the running back. Then they run, you know, they fake handoff to the orbit guy. At the same time, the fullback's coming out on a wheel
route to the right to the other side. Yeah, right. They run a boomerang motion with the reverse the receiver. Then the fullback goes the other direction.
Right, little things like that. Look, you can even do that with Vance McDonald in the backfield. Okay. What a gimmick that would be. Okay. Like, you know, that way you don't even have Rosie Nix in the game, but you could do something where you put Vance McDonald in the backfield as a lead blocker, lineup will look like that. And then run the orbit motion with a guy like, you know, Martavis or whatnot. And then sneak, a guy that's very, you know, can get out there in space, Vance McDonald, and some, you know, just things like that, I think. And, you know, when you hear people say, here's the thing, when people holler at on Twitter, oh, Todd Haley needs to be more creative, 98% of them don't even know what that means. Okay. 98% of them just say it because it sounds good to say. If you
right. Because the things aren't working.
Right. So because things aren't working. Now there are ways to get more creative with what we see with the personnel grouping, and that's just one of many. I just rattled that one off because it's fresh in my head.
So okay, now we got a bunch of questions. Our buddy Bob asks up in Canada asks about what do you expect the wide receiver core to look like the rest of the season. Another one of our listeners asked about. I just want to make sure I get this right. Maybe it was Callan. Yeah. Oh no. The gist of it was: do you think that Martavis is a bad influence on the Steelers' young wide receivers? So let's start with the first question. And what do you expect the Steelers' wide receiver? You know, we did this at the beginning of the year, and I think you got this much better than I did. In terms of Juju's involvement in the offense quicker than I thought it would be. Obviously, I thought Eli Rogers would have a bigger role. We both kind of have missed on Martavis, as has everybody else. So that's kind of been the major difference in terms of snaps and touches. Juju's kind of really taken over for Eli and more. Eli's been, you know, not a part of the offense. What do you expect to see going forward from here?
I think your 11 personnel is going to be the majority of it's going to be AB, Juju, and Martavis. You can do a lot. Look, Juju's here to stay. You can do so many things with him in the slot, I think. And the more he learns this game and understands what he's looking at on the other side, and the better feel Ben gets for him. You can see a lot more, you know, kind of choice routes maybe coming with him as well. But, you know, those are going to be your three. I think a guy like Eli Rogers, you know, hopes to get 8 to 10 snaps a game. There's absolutely no sense to put DHB on the field unless an injury happens. So, you know, you got your four wide receivers.
Justin Hunter is not going to play again this year, right? I mean, he's done. And if everybody's healthy, he's likely done.
Yeah, here's the hoping that he doesn't have to dress. That'll be a great sign.
Do you think there is any – you know, we get asked this question all the time. And obviously Dave, being in Florida and Las Vegas, hasn't been around the team. I have been around the team a fair bit, certainly a bunch of preseason, you know, time up at St. Vincent. Sometime in the locker room. I'm not really that guy in the locker room, but I've seen interactions. In general, I'm not a huge believer in, look, there are cancers on teams. Leadership is incredibly important. I do believe that. But I don't think a guy like a Martavis Bryant is a guy who is going to be disruptive. I think the Steelers organization has enough history, enough leadership at the very top, starting with Art Rooney to Kevin, and particularly and most importantly to Mike, in terms of how that interacts with the players. I know when anything goes wrong or there's any celebration, I do think there's some people in Pittsburgh, and we've all said this, Dave and I have said this, and I think, you know, there's some racial overtones at times about Mike Tomlin being the coach, and when things are lax, that there's a lack of discipline that starts with the head coach. It couldn't be further from the truth, in my opinion. Having been around Mike Tomlin, I think people know, look, I question things about Mike's in-game management and some other things. I will never for a second question his leadership. I think he's an incredible leader. I think he's got the full support of his players. He treats them as men, and as men, sometimes they make bad decisions. That's not Mike Tomlin's fault that, you know, 60 to 70 guys aged 20 to 40 in this case occasionally make bad decisions on and off the field. Look, you can't legislate behavior all the time and have an environment where guys want to come to work. They want to perform for you. They want to go out and do their best. And I think, look, in Mike's, you know, 10 plus seasons now with the Steelers, we've seen that continually. I only point to the 8-8 record as being, you know, reason enough to just stop the conversation. The guy's never had a losing season. That's enough. We can stop with the coward player stuff. We can stop with all the other things. He has been a fantastic winning coach for the Steelers. And so, this is a long-winded way around to get back to the wide receiver thing. I think the Steelers have supported Martavis Bryant. I think they've done everything right with Martavis Bryant. They weren't allowed to, as an organization, have contact with Martavis Bryant for the time he was suspended. Now, I think that's a flaw in the NFL's program. You would think not only do you want to get a guy into kind of the recovery process, the treatment process, the counseling process that he has, but you also would think that football is an anchor and has been an anchor in all these guys' lives for much of their lives, let alone their careers, that you don't want to take away something from them like that. But that's the way the rule is. The Steelers followed the rule. They welcomed him back. They publicly at least said all the right things, and I believe felt he was doing all the right things. So, and Mike had his conversation with Martavis. Martavis said, you know, I'm done with this. We're going to move forward. I'm going to go out and play football. I'm going to ball. I'm going to do my best. I believe all that's going to happen. So, no, I don't think Juju, and I don't think Eli, or I don't think guys, there's enough leadership and character in that locker room that I don't think guys are influenced by other guys making bad decisions. And if they are, then it's their own choice and their own lack of discipline that they follow that.
Yeah, when I call Mark, my issues with Martavis, I don't view him as a guy that's bad in the locker room or a guy loafing at practice. I think he's a cancer by what he does off the field with his actions off the field. It's constant, those kind of constant distractions. Now that we're past the trade deadline. He's got nothing to, what's the old line in Officer and a Gentleman? I got nowhere else to go, you know?
Right.
I wonder how many that went over to, how many.
He, you're right. He doesn't, you know, from here to the end of the year, he doesn't have anywhere to go. And if he wants to get out, the best way for him to get out, because they're not going to renegotiate his salary. He's going to get $650,000 next year too. And it's going to be with the Steelers or somebody else. But the only way somebody else is going to want him is if he's good with the Steelers. So there's only one way to go here.
Right. And that's keep your mouth shut.
Play football.
Hope Ben throws you a bunch of deep passes and you score about four or five more touchdowns in the second half. And look, that's not out of the question. I've never doubted Martavis Bryant's talent. I never have. Now, he is just a two-trick pony, in my opinion, but he can run like a damn gazelle when the football's in his hand. So I do expect a better half, better second half out of him, as everyone should. It comes to the question is can they connect on a deep ball and can they use him somehow inside the red zone? But no, I don't hate the guy. I just think that his actions over the course of his career in Pittsburgh off the field have been very disruptive.
Okay, so. That covers the wide receivers. Grant asked a question about, and this is the big picture question for Steeler fans. Our buddy Bob pointed out in an email just now that the Steelers here at this point, Pro Football Focus said the Steelers had the sixth toughest strength of schedule in the first half and just the 25th in the second half. And anybody who has been listening to the podcast or follows the Steelers closely and looked at the schedule themselves, we all looked at it exactly the opposite. The first half of the schedule was the easy half, and it was going to get harder in the second half. You had divisional games. You had three of those. You had, the Packers with Aaron Rodgers. You had the Colts with Andrew Luck. You knew the Texans were going to have a great defense. I mean, how the world changes. I mean, it is dramatically different, and as Bob points out, so there's a whole different flip on things here for the Steelers into the second half. Dave, let me ask you this. We both think it's a lock that the Steelers win the AFC North. A couple people asked the question, if you had to look at it today, how the Steelers stacked up with the Patriots, not whether they're going to beat them or lose to them. You stack up, you say, who's the better football team? The quarterback position goes the Patriots' way, and I think that's inarguable at this point. What about the rest of it?
Until you, if you want to beat a man, you got to beat the man. Woo! Look, they're still the better team, but the Patriots had their defensive issues early in the season. But look what they did to the Falcons, a couple of weeks ago. They find their holes and they plug them. They've even lost Dante Hightower. You know, they haven't had great cornerback play. They've even missed Gilmore, I think, missed some time with injury. They're just better coached, all the way around, and they find a way to chew up these holes. So there's no way, even though the Steelers' defense is playing good this season, we do not know. We haven't seen enough man coverage yet. We don't know how they're going to mix it up against the Patriots come time to play them. I think I said this in the last podcast. Previous podcast, I hope they don't have to play a lot of man in this next meeting against the Patriots, even though I think they probably will. Hopefully this game won't have as much. You know, what I'm getting at is I don't want to put too much on tape for Bill Belichick should they have to meet him again, you know, in the playoffs there. Obviously, you want to play for home field advantage throughout the playoffs as well, too. That's why that game's going to be huge, you know, on so many levels there. But I understand why they haven't played a lot of man so far. I understand why they probably are not going to play a lot of man up until this game against the Patriots, as well. Look at the opposing quarterbacks that this team now faces in the second half of the season here. And yeah, Bob's right. This thing really, due to injuries, this thing really has flopped as far as what we're looking at. And yeah, Steelers fans should probably be disappointed if the team doesn't go 6-2 or better during the final 8 games of the season there. But I guess back to your original question, I can't say that this team matches up with the Patriots until, you know, they play the Patriots.
Until they match up with the Patriots, yeah. Okay, so when you look at let's go over to the other side of the football, and Matthew Stafford kind of he revived everybody's worst nightmare. I mean, that's the first time we've seen kind of the Patriots playoff game, guys running open around the field. You get 411 yards or whatever it was passing, and it brings, you know, people have these horror movie flashbacks to playing the Patriots and getting taken apart. Level of concern from Matt Stafford's performance with the Steelers in the second half?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's there against any great quarterback that you might play. You play those kind of cover two situations there where you let them easily identify it pre-snap. And I think this plays into one other question that we may have gotten the past several days as well, too, about in that game against the Lions, did a few of the Steelers cornerbacks kind of play, you know, not drift far enough in kind of depth when there was seemingly nobody underneath them. Yeah, you could probably make a point of that, as well. In other words, you're providing too many holes. You're expecting your safety to do a little bit too much in getting help over the top. Look, the safety play against the Lions was not great. We've already pointed a finger at a couple of those to who was it? TJ, what was his name?
Jones?
T.Y. or T.J. Jones had a couple of those on each of the sidelines there that I think not only could the cornerbacks have done a better job, but I think Mike Mitchell could have done a better job of recognizing those over the top and making them a little bit more contested. Joe Hayden seemed to guess one time on something on his side there. Artie Burns, not a great game. Look, you play enough zone during a game, Keith Butler pointed out, look, when we play in some man, it's usually part of fire zone stuff as well. We haven't seen the full gamut of the Steelers playbook yet. Carnell Lake talked about this past week saying, you know, I'm comfortable when we have to play more man. We'll see. The opposing quarterbacks are good when are considered good when they're able to recognize, and there is no impenetrable defense, okay? It's a matter of you mixing it up enough, showing enough looks, and making a quarterback really have to hold on to the football and think, and you're taking your chances that he's not. This isn't the days of old with Dick LeBeau where you say, don't let it be thrown over your head. Just tackle the catch and make teams go 13 play drives to score, because odds are most of them in the league can't do that. Those days are gone. You've got to be able to play matchup zone. You got to be able to play zone. You got to be able to play man. You got to be able to mix all of it up. And right now the Steelers aren't mixing it up enough that when they play a good quarterback like Matthew Stafford, you see what it happened the other day.
Yeah, you don't get pressure, and that's what happens. Most quarterbacks will pick you apart. Sir Dan asks, and I'm going to rephrase his question a little bit. I mean, he asks, basically, what team in recent memory was as complete, Steeler team was as complete as this one? Let me ask it like this. Is this the best Steeler team that they've had since they made the Super Bowl in 2010?
Oh, yeah.
Best, most complete.
Oh, yeah, obviously since 2010. Easily. That defense, I mean, look at the defense. The offense is there. Look, you could put this defense on rival with that 2008 unit too. You know, we'll see.
Well, I mean, I will say, we talked about passing yards against, and as you pointed out rightly, you know, look, passing yard, you know, yards against isn't always the great measurement, but as I said, over 16 weeks, that kind of balanced itself out. And I was talking about how defense has given up, you know, so many had given up less than 300. Well, the Steelers got their comeuppance in the yards category in that Lions game, where the passing yards in one game went from 150 to 180 because the Lions went from 411. Look, if you have it around 200 at the end of the year, that'd be awfully good. But we'll see. You know, I think that I still think there's a question with this pass defense, and maybe the first 7 weeks of the season it got, I don't want to say masked because that's maybe too strong, but it certainly was aided by the pressure that the Steelers were able to get on the quarterback, as every defense would be, every secondary would be.
The two go hand in hand. Pass rush and coverage go hand in hand all the time. And look, comparing what offensive line would you rather have, 2017 version or the 2008 version? I mean, there is no reason this team should not – plain and simple, there's no reason this team should not compete for a Super Bowl this year and really the next couple, to be quite honest with you, because they'll be able to keep a lot of this nucleus together before they have to tear it down and start all over again, you know. But this is a team right now, a franchise, that should be able to compete for Super Bowls for the next couple of years, including this year. It'd be disappointing if they don't.
Our buddy Ken asked just a couple technical questions. How's the spot foul works? Basically, Ken, a spot foul works as generally it's a foul, usually a holding call that happens past the line of scrimmage. So the play, if it's 5 yards downfield and it's a 10-yard holding call, from the original line of scrimmage, it will look like a 5-yard penalty, but it's from the spot of the foul. Dave, what I don't know, and I think I've asked this before, is how do they account for that 5 yards that was gained on the play, but a play that goes down? Does it count as an active play for yards gained? Say if Le'Veon Bell goes for 10 yards, there's a spot foul 5 yards down the field, and it comes back and it's registered as a 5-yard loss. There's no play for Le'Veon Bell, right? No carry, no yardage. It's just is it a 5-yard holding penalty? Is that how it's designated?
No, when you have a spot foul like that, if it's not ruled no play, then that, you know, the player gets stats. You know, I think it's dead.
So does
stats.
He get the stat to the point of the spot, the point of the foul?
Oh, geez, and this makes it so hard when I go back through my chart.
Yeah, don't worry about it, but we'll come back to that because I'm just really, let's say he goes for 42 yards and there's a call 10 yards down the field. And it comes back as essentially a no gain play. He obviously doesn't get the 42 yards. I'm just trying to remember how they book the stat on that. We'll come back to that one either today or on Monday. The 10-second runoff under 2 minutes, Ken, the reason that's in there now on a penalty is let's say there were 15 seconds left in a game and the offense completes a pass to the 2-yard line, kind of like the Lions-Falcons thing. and they're trying to get set up, and they realize they might not, and a player, an offensive player, moves early or commits some kind of foul where he can stop the clock so that they can run another play. Well, you don't want the offense to have the ability to stop the clock to their benefit. That's why they run that extra 10 seconds off. The Lions got kind of screwed in that Falcons game because it was a review, and so there was a runoff and didn't go their way, obviously. Okay, Dave, so another question that was asked, and I think a good one, is what individually – who are the weakest starters on the Steelers? And you want to go offense or defense? I mean, I think offense, it's pretty clear the weakest link, if you will. And this is, you know, not necessarily being, it's just an evaluative thing, is Ali Villanueva is the Steelers' weakest guy. You've got four guys playing next to him who are, you know, Pro Bowl caliber players. You know, Ramon's never been there. But, you know, the pedigree of the other guys is higher than Ramon. And we know about the skill guys. I guess it's Ali or the tight end position. You want to lean in one way or the other?
Jesse James. Sorry, folks. Jesse James is your weakest link on offense right now as starters.
Yeah. Is Ali next to him?
David, like I told you before, I don't go into weekend games worrying about how Villanueva is going to do in a game. I go into games worrying how Jesse James is going to run block.
Okay. The other side of the ball is, I think, an interesting one. And coming into the season, it was very clear to all of us that the answer was going to be Ross Cockrell and Vince Williams. And now, you know, Cockrell's not there. Hayden's taking his spot. I'll let you tee this one up first. What's your answer to the weakest on the defensive side of the ball?
People aren't going to like it, but I think it's Artie Burns. I worry about him once or twice a game, letting somebody behind him. I'm still not overly confident in the way he is able to tackle the catch, or the way he's able to sometimes crack and replace on the outside in some of these runs. I think he's probably the weakest link in this defense. Sorry, folks.
I can't argue with anything you said. I don't know that I think Bud's a weak link, but I'm a huge Bud fan and have high expectations and haven't seen the level of consistency from Bud's play that I would like. I'm sure if we took a poll of our listeners and put three names on the board or four names on the board, I think Mike Mitchell would be a runaway winner for our listeners. With maybe, you know, maybe Vince in the conversation, maybe some people would put Sean Davis because he started a little slow this season in there. But that's a good one, and we'll see how that plays out the second half. Dave, we've got a million more, and I'll spend a little bit more time over the weekend going through the hundreds of questions we got and try and maybe spend. Since we spent so much time looking big picture today, which I wanted to do, to get into some more specifics and have them detailed so we can roll through them. But I thought, we could cover a couple other things and do our picks. What do you think?
Yeah, that's fine. I wanted to ask you real quick. Juju Smith-Schuster, obviously the longest touchdown pass in Steelers history. Happened against Detroit there, 97 yards. Do you remember what the record was before that?
Was it Martavis against the Bengals for 95?
No, that was actually 94.
94, right? I was thinking 94, 95. Was there a touchdown against the Arizona Cardinals years back?
Yeah, Mike Wallace, that's the one. Not 95. That was the leader in the clubhouse prior to Juju. The Martavis Bryant one is now the third longest passing scoring touchdown.
And what I know you know, and I know that a lot of certainly our younger listeners might not know, is for a long time, the Steeler record holder for longest touchdown catch was Mark Malone.
Well, up until it was actually tied by Bobby Shaw. That's why, David, I want to tease this because I have found footage of all these, okay? And I've got GIFs.
Oh, awesome.
I got GIFs and GIFs going up on the site later on today. Mark Malone, I found that one.
From Cliff Stout, right?
No, from Bradshaw, brother.
Right, from Terry, right.
That was in a 1981 game against the Seattle Seahawks.
He lines up top to the right side.
He does do that, and he's wide open. It's a blown coverage. Yeah,
this was not him juking and stiff arming defenders along the way.
Right. Bradshaw just throws it up out there. Mark Malone runs up underneath it and runs the other 60 yards for a touchdown there. That happened against Seattle. Guess who was on the field for that play, David?
Give me a hint.
He played for Seattle. He's with the Steelers now.
Oh, Keith Butler.
Keith Butler on the field for that play.
Nice.
That happened in 1981, and that record stood for 20 years, right?
I know it stood for forever.
It remained untied. Bobby Shaw. Remember Superman Bobby Shaw?
I do. Now, this is the one. I remember the four other players we've talked about. I do not remember this play at all. What year was it?
This was 2001 in a December, I think it was a week 14 game against the Baltimore Ravens.
Super Bowl winners that year.
Cordell Stewart drops back the pass, and it's kind of reminiscent of the Juju play. Looks like Bobby Shaw splits the two deep safeties on the play. Cordell hits him on stride in stride. Bobby Shaw's off to the races in that game. That was 90 yards. That matched Mark Malone's 90 yards. I have both of those gifts for folks later on. In fact, David, I put the Shaw one. I tease people. I put the Shaw one up in my Twitter feed last night. Now, what is the longest one after the two longest ones after, you know, after Mark Malone or the next shortest after Mark Malone and Bobby Shaw?
The next longest? I don't know. I'm going to assume it's, 88 yards from. I have no idea.
All right. One's from your boy. And I found this one for you as well, too, David. 89 yards, Neil O'Donnell to Dwight Stone.
Dwight Hands of Stone. Dwight Stone, nice. I like that.
Week one of the 1991 season in a game against the Chargers, if I'm not mistaken, Bubby started that game, got knocked out, got sandwiched by a couple of players in there. Neil O'Donnell had to come in, and really the play is kind of a screen pass over to the right side, and Dwight Stone takes it the distance down the right sideline for 89 yards. One that I could not find yet, also 89 yards, Bubby Brister to Louis Lips in 1988. That one went 89 yards there. So I found all of these long touchdown passes. Sands, the one from Bristol to Louis Lips, and I'll have those up on the site later on today. Speaking of Juju, now that Deshaun Watson has been injured and is out for the season, what are the odds that Juju possibly wins Offensive Player of the Year, rookie Offensive Player of the Year?
Zero.
You think because of the kid in Hunt in Kansas City?
Kareem Hunt right now is so far ahead of him. It would have to be, he'd have to get hurt or something along those lines, I think, for that to happen.
I mean, Hunt's kind of cooled off these last couple of games, though, hasn't he, David, or no?
Well, I mean, his numbers haven't been off the charts, but at the end of the year, he's going to put up awfully big numbers. I mean, Juju, he's got 24 catches for 424. If he finishes for 50 and 850, if he just doubles his numbers, that's a really good year. I don't think that's going to do it for him as Offensive Rookie of the Year.
Where's Kareem Hunt right now? Is he's got 763 yards rushing on 146 carries, and he's got four touchdowns right now. So, yeah, I mean.
What's he got receiving?
Uh, not a lot, right? I mean,
He had a couple big catches, I thought, recently that, you know, he's got more than I thought.
I'll have to look that up. I don't have that
I'll pull it up.
In front of me right now. It'll take me just a minute here. Okay, what about defensive rookie of the year? Does TJ have an outside chance, maybe? I mean, you got all these guys getting hurt. You know, Myles Garrett can't stay healthy. Let's see. Hunt has.
No, Marshawn Lattimore is going to win that, and that might be done already as well. I mean, the turnaround of that Saints defense and what he's done for them, starting at corner, probably certainly a top 10 corner in the league already. I think that's a done deal.
But isn't it rare for a defensive back to win that award? Kareem Hunt, 28 catches, 307 yards, two touchdowns. So he has had more than I thought he had. So yeah, he's going to be tough for Juju to beat for sure there.
His catch numbers are almost matching Juju's, and then he's got 700 yards rushing. So
okay, what about these quarterbacks going down now?
I mean, look, you know, the Deshaun Watson thing, it's, you know, we talk about how physical a game football is and the injuries and how rough it all is. And Deshaun Watson and Teddy Bridgewater had two brutal injuries. And, you know, it looks like Teddy might get back this next week. That's fantastic, obviously, if he gets an opportunity. People are talking about him playing in a couple of weeks. I mean, if I'm Mike Zimmer, he's not taking over for Case Keenum. Case Keenum's, they're 6-2. They won 4 in a row, man. Case Keenum's my quarterback. We're not putting Teddy Bridgewater in there because, you know, it's a feel-good story. Deshaun Watson is a massive loss. I mean, he was going to put up numbers if he continued. You know, he's not going to have the Seattle game every week, but he was going to be he was going to break all the rookie records. Touchdown passes is 26. He has 19 in 7 games. I mean, it's really unfortunate for the NFL to see so many marquee names go down, and this was another one. It's too bad. It's too bad. And, you know, I know it's fun if you're a Steeler fan to know that you don't have to face Luck, Rodgers, and Watson, but give me Luck, Rodgers, and Watson every year.
What quarterback outside of Tom Brady fears you the most during the final 8 games? You could have made an argument for Watson up until...
I would have said Watson. Absolutely would have said Watson. I'm just trying to make sure I'm remembering who all they play. Just run me through the schedule again. It's Colts,
all right,
Packers.
Here's the quarterbacks.
Mariota. I like Mariota. He hasn't been great this year, but Mariota's elusiveness, which is, you know, how great he's been in the red zone, although he hadn't been great this year. He's never thrown an interception in the red zone. He scares me a little bit.
Jacoby Brissett, Marcus Mariota, Brett Hundley, Andy Dalton, Joe Flacco, Tom Brady, Tom Savage, and DeShone Kizer.
There's no question. I mean, people aren't going to necessarily agree with my second choice, but it would be Andy Dalton because, you know, if Andy Dalton has time, I think he can be good. He can be a decent quarterback. So, but yeah, it's not the 27 Yankees coming in to face the Steelers in the second half.
I'll pick Joe Flacco as my the guy I'm worried about the most, David.
You know, he's hurt the Steelers, so.
And he missed a couple throws in that game, you know, several weeks ago as well too. And he doesn't have the best weapons out there on top of. But I mean, I think he's still a capable quarterback. But okay, boy, here we are.
What the hell happened to the Bills last night?
What team was?
My goodness, their offensive line was sieve-like. It was. I mean, give the Jets and Todd Bowles all the credit in the world. Again, my man Matt Moore hasn't been getting it done, but my man Josh McCown's been getting it done. He looked good. That's a good defense. I think it was the lowest points against defense in the NFL coming into this game, and they took them apart in the ground and the air. They took their offensive line apart. I mean, that was an embarrassing performance for the Bills. I mean, that was Miami-like from the week before. I was shocked, Dave, and we both got it wrong. Obviously, you were a little surprised yourself.
Yeah, which team was entered that game 5-2?
Yeah, right.
Here's the thing. Just goes to show you how wrong I can be sometimes. I had the New York Jets in my preseason picking of all the games in the standings. I had them not winning a game this year, and here they are, 4-5. So it just goes to show you. I say it almost every other week. There's no such thing as a trap game in the NFL, folks. I mean,
And boy, Vegas is going to rake it in on the Jets. I told this story before. The over-under started at 5, and all the money came in on the under, and the bookies moved it to 4.5, and all the money came in on the under, and the bookies didn't, they moved it to 4, and all the money came in on the under, and so they just kept moving the VIG from, you know, 110 to 200 to 300. At 4 and minus 400, money still came in on the Jets, and they couldn't move it anymore, so they just let it sit there. And they, if the Jets win, so now the Vegas is off the hook. If the Jets win one more game, Vegas is going to make a lot of money. If the Jets win two more games, Vegas is going to be laughing on that. They'll cover a lot of their losses for the money bet against the Jets this year.
Well, I wish we could have got to more questions today, but maybe we will on Monday there, because we better get our picks out there so these people can get some productivity done at work.
Yeah, and the way we're rolling right now, maybe they might get on the other side of some of these picks, at least for the way I've been rolling right now. Do you have a little score sheet about how much you're ahead of me?
Yeah, I'm way ahead of you. Get busy.
Get busy. All right. Okay, week 9 in the NFL. Let's kick things off with the 1 o'clock games, Denver at Philadelphia. It'll be Brock Osweiler at the helm for the Broncos in this one. The Eagles, a little bit of a slow start last week against the bad Niners team, but they ended up blowing them out. Dave, -7.5, Philadelphia.
Yeah, I'm all over Philadelphia on this. I know that Broncos defense is supposed to be pretty good, but they just got too many issues on offense. Give me the Eagles lay the points.
Yeah, Denver's defense did play pretty well in that game last weekend. Was at Kansas City on Sunday night. They deserved a better fate from their offense. You know what? I'm going to take Denver, and I'll tell you why. Is I have this belief that I've held for a long time that when backup quarterbacks don't play for a long time, they forget what it's like to get crushed and killed and whatever. And they come in and they play for whether it's a half or a game or two games, they come in and they play better than they might normally play. And then they come back to earth. So I'm going to go with that theory on Brock Osweiler and take the Broncos. Rams go to the Giants. How about this? What would this line have been at the start of the season? It's Rams -3.5 in New Jersey against the Giants. And I will take the Rams. I think our man Wade Phillips has got the defense sorted out, playing well now. And I like the offense. I think the Giants are, they're probably they're better than their 1-6 record, but I don't think they're good.
Yeah, look, have you even seen the guys that have been ruled out by the Giants already? A couple of guys on the offensive line. That's not going to bode well for them. I can't see. I know this game is in New York and the whole West Coast, East Coast thing. Rams are going to have to turn the football over a whole heck of a lot, I think, in order to lose this game. Give me the Rams, lay those 3.5 points.
By the way, bye teams this week, the Bears, the Browns, the Chargers, the Vikings, the Patriots, and the Steelers. The Buccaneers go to the Saints. It is showtime for the Buccaneers. Their season's on the line with this game. If they lose, they're done. Their offensive line has not been good. Jameis Winston has not played well. Unfortunately, I think everybody expected more from the Bucs this year. New Orleans has been great. And why, if you get a chance to watch this game, if you got, an opportunity to see some teams you don't see often, watch the Saints defense, watch this kid Lattimore back there, Kenny Vaccaro in the secondary, Drew Brees. They've become a running team. They're running the ball as much as they have since 2009 when they did win the Super Bowl. They're much more balanced. The back that they drafted and Ingram are doing a great job. David, who was the kid from Tennessee that they drafted?
What is his name? Geez, we profiled him all. I don't have it off the top of my head.
Kamara.
Yeah, Alvin Kamara.
Kamara's been very good for the Saints. So having said all that, Dave, the Bucs, their season's on the line here. They're getting 6.5. I think the Saints win the game. And the Bucs were terrible at home against Carolina in a division game last week. They have to play better, or this is it. And Dirk Cutter's job is going to be in jeopardy here sooner or later if they don't play better. But I'll take the Bucs plus the points.
Yeah, I think Saints win this, but I think this might end up being a field goal game. So I'm with you. Give me Bucs plus those points.
Jacksonville and Cincinnati, the Bengals season's on the line. They almost blew it last week against the Colts, as we pointed out. Carlos Dunlop's interception late saved the day. They're not going to save the day against the Jags. But 5.5 is a lot, Dave. I've been debating this one back and forth. This is a Vegas doesn't know what to do either. 5.5 line. Give me the Jags, but I don't feel good about it.
Boy, that Bengals defense, man, is going to kill. I think this is a game that Blake Bortles loses for the Jaguars here. I got a funny feeling about this. As good as that Jaguars defense is playing, I think the Bengals defense is the one that ends up making plays in this game. So give me you said you took the Jaguars, right? Laying the points. Give me the Bengals and those points.
Atlanta at Carolina. Carolina plus one at home. Boy, maybe the Falcons. Maybe the Falcons are starting to. You know, they fumbled a bunch. They turned it over a bunch against the Jets, but they put up some points finally. They showed a little bit in terrible weather. They showed a little bit of an offensive revival. So I like Carolina's defense, but they got rid of Kelvin Benjamin. Give me the Falcons minus the point on the road.
Yeah, I'm with you. I just don't see how the Panthers are able to stick in this game, especially if that Falcons offense plays the way they're supposed to play. So I'm laying that point.
Texans minus 6.5 hosting the Colts. This line was I didn't see what it was. I could pull it up here while we talk for a second. I bet it was 10 before Deshaun. I bet it was more than 10 before Deshaun Watson's injury. It might have been as much as 13. 6.5 though, I'll still take it and assume that Tom Savage maybe learned something on the sideline over the past 7 weeks.
I think Jacoby Brissett's look, I mean, that interception against the Bengals was ugly, but I think he can move the offense just enough. Give me the Colts plus those points. I know it's going to be, I'm not comfortable with Tom Savage on short notice like this. So give me the Colts plus the points.
Okay, so next one is the Ravens at Tennessee. Tennessee minus 3.5. I'll go with my heart here and root for the Titans. Minus 3.5.
Oh, boy. The Ravens can't afford to lose this game, right? I mean, they're done.
They're done.
I still think they get, like I told you the other day, I think they get into one of these two wild cards there, and I think this game's key. Give me the Ravens plus the points.
Arizona at San Francisco. Maybe the most ridiculous line in history was Mike Shanahan saying that our boy Jimmy Garoppolo might not start a game this year. I will bet the universe against that. Maybe he doesn't play this week, but he's going to be the guy. But this is going to be a game of inept quarterback play at 4:05. Avert your eyes with C.J. Beathard and who's the kid, Michigan State kid, quarterback in the Cardinals?
Stanton.
Stanton. I don't know. Give me the Niners plus 2.5. Don't watch it.
Give me the Cardinals late of points.
Seahawks minus 7 against the Skins. Man, got to wonder about that Seahawks defense. Got taken apart by Deshaun Watson last week. Big plays on both sides. Great game from Russell Wilson. You know, where Russell Wilson sits on the list of quarterbacks this year is a very interesting question. Is he a top 5 guy? Certainly a top 10 guy. And people know that I'm a Cousins backer here. You'd think the Seahawks defense would crack down with the injuries the Redskins have. I'll take the Seahawks minus 7, but again, this one, no conviction on this one.
Oh man, part of me really wants to take the Redskins here. It really does, but I playing in Seattle there. The injuries I think that the Redskins have had, catching up with them. I'm going to have to go with you, David. I'm going to take the Seahawks and lay the points at home here.
Chiefs plus 2.5 on the road. If you're a Steeler fan, this might be one of the few times you root for the Cowboys. Ezekiel Elliott back in the fold. I mean, I really thought this week's decision was kind of this was going to be it. You couldn't do anything to get him reinstated. Pretty soon it's going to be it's going to be quarter by quarter. It's going to be half by half, then quarter by quarter, and then it's going to be play by play. They're going to be appealing things to get Zeke back on the field or not. Dave, give me the Cowboys with Zeke minus 2.5 at home.
Give me the Chiefs. They're just too good of a team.
So we've had some good games on the schedule for Thursday, Sundays, and Mondays. They haven't all been great to watch. We're losers this week. The Dolphins host the Raiders. Dolphins plus 3. Give me the Dolphins plus 3 at home.
Give me the Raiders here.
And the Packers host the Lions. The Packers plus 2 at home. Give me the Lions on Monday night.
I'll take the Lions as well, too. I think, obviously not having Aaron Rodgers is going to be huge. Matthew Stafford's a good quarterback. I think he's got enough weapons over there. I think the Lions win this by a touchdown or more.
Okay, well, we'll have NFL to talk about on Monday. I'll get through a lot more of these questions. You're welcome to send some more if you'd like. And then we'll get into the week as we'll have the Tomlin presser and Ben speaking. Dave, anything? Didn't Ben speaking on Wednesday?
What, this past Wednesday or this coming Wednesday?
Yeah, this past Wednesday.
Yeah, you remember he spoke. He really didn't have too terribly much to say.
Yeah, was there anything to add? We didn't touch on it.
No, nothing. He's got confidence in Martavis Bryant. Thinks he'll have a great second half. Yada yada. All the things you would kind of expect him to say. So nice to not have really much of any drama heading into the bye week here. Once again, folks, I don't think we scratched the surface on the questions that we got via email there. We are reading them though. David will, of course, try to answer a few more and send some thank you emails for the donations this past week as well. We'll try to get at it again on Monday there, recap what happened in week 9 of the NFL, answer more questions, start getting you ready for what's going to happen against the Colts in week 10 there. We plan on having a beat writer on Wednesday, Phil B. Wilson. Hopefully get a hold of him. Of course, the Mike Tomlin press conference on Tuesday. We'll start wrapping up on Wednesday as well. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and want to donate like others have, go to SteelersDepot.com. Find that donate button upper right navigational bar as well. David, have a great weekend. I'm going to sit back and watch a lot of football this weekend.
Yeah, enjoy it. No Steelers, so get out, enjoy the beautiful weekend, or sit down and watch some other teams. But as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.